Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is our clinical focus podcast on the subject of multiple sclerosis. In part one, we outlined some of the causes, some of the theories behind why MS may develop. And this opens up the possibility for dietary and supplement and innovative medical interventions. So let's tackle that in part two. When it comes to diet, I often suggest a gluten and dairy-free paleo-type diet. I'm with Terry Walls on the proposition that that diet can eliminate most food allergens, and that the reduction in refined carbohydrates, as well as the inclusion of lots of fish and even animal protein from sources that are grass-fed, thus being richer in omega-3 fatty acids, makes a lot of sense in the treatment of MS. We also like to undertake intestinal repair and what we call reflorestation. We want to normalize the function of the gastrointestinal tract. As I mentioned earlier, the hygiene theory has something to do with MS. And if you have an improper balance of bacteria in your gut, it is more likely that you may have leaky gut or you may have autoimmunity. So intestinal repair occurs through diet. It occurs through the use of probiotics. And there are actually some nutraceuticals that target leaky gut, like L-glutamine, which is a substrate for the intestinal epithelium. In terms of hormone treatments, before we get to specific supplements, we'll talk a little bit about hormones. There's an interesting relationship between levels of estriol, which is actually an unusual type of estrogen. When you get hormone replacement for menopause, that's conventional, and when you're on the birth control pill, you absolutely get none of this. Estriol, which is E3, has been shown when given in high doses, about 7 milligrams a day, to be helpful for slowing the progression of MS. So we look sometimes for an opportunity for treating women at or near the time of menopause. If they need hormone replacement therapy, we might dose them with higher doses of estriol. And there are actually some drug companies that are looking at estriol as a potential treatment for MS. In men, often we find testosterone is low. Testosterone has anti-inflammatory effects, and we might use testosterone to help a man. Plus, you know, lack of strength and muscle wasting occurs in MS, and testosterone might be beneficial, although we don't see that many men with MS. In both sexes, and particularly women, DHEA can have a strengthening effect, and also these androgens have anti-inflammatory effects and have repairing effects, and they have muscle-sparing effects, and muscle wasting is a big problem in patients who are essentially denervated. They don't have nerve impulses going to their muscles, and the muscles, because of lack of nerve impulses and lack of use and weakness, shrink progressively, and then patients become unable to walk or at risk for falls. There's another type of drug treatment that I use, which is low-dose naltrexone, or LDN. Low-dose naltrexone is based on the work of Dr. Bernard Behari here in New York City. In the 1970s and 1980s, he especially treated HIV patients with low doses of a medication that's used for heroin addicts to block the effects of the opioids they take and sort of take away the incentive to get high. When given in low doses, naltrexone can boost endorphins and enkephalins, which have an immune modulating effect. And so it is part of my program with many patients with autoimmunity, particularly ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, to use low-dose naltrexone, which is a prescription medication, has to be specially compounded. But we could do an entire podcast on LDN and its potential. There are entire medical conferences devoted to LDN research. But I think it's an important part of the protocol for patients with MS. We might also undertake mercury detoxification. So we might test for mercury using a provocative test, giving a patient a fixed dose of DMSA and then a pre and post urine to see if they spill a lot of mercury. And if they have high doses, either in the blood or the urine, then we will begin a process of detoxification, usually with DMSA backed up with N-acetylcysteine. DMSA is actually a prescription medication that is requires a doctor's prescription to use. One of the more oddball treatments, although becoming more mainstream these days with legalization of medical marijuana and more liberal attitudes towards this, is marijuana. And not necessarily smoking pot cigarettes, although this can be beneficial. And I know that Montel Williams, the TV host, is a big proponent of marijuana for his multiple sclerosis. But there's actually evidence that, and this is not just using marijuana to feel good because it's depressing and debilitating to have MS. I mean, sometimes you might consider, well, let's use any kind of drug cocktail in people who are very debilitated, unhappy, and maybe end stage, just to kind of keep them high and raise their spirits a little bit. It's not about that. It actually, while depression is a factor in many patients with MS, there's sort of a brain fatigue that occurs that doesn't affect just the motor functions of the body, but also the emotional functions of the body. Marijuana seems to have some interesting properties vis-a-vis the nervous system, and I think this is going to be an emerging field in the next few months, and I will be reporting this on this to you. And it may be the THC component of marijuana, which is the get-high component, but it also may be the CBD or the cannabidiol component of marijuana, which is not very, it doesn't really have so many mental effects. It may have immune modulating effects, particularly on the immune system. One problem in MS in particular is spasticity. Patients have painful limbs that are sometimes hard to stretch out and get into spasm very easily. That might be at least partially alleviated with magnesium. We want to keep magnesium levels up in patients with MS. But also, marijuana definitely is helpful for spasticity, but it may also have an anti-inflammatory effect in the brain. And there's a lot of research ongoing in some studies. The use of cannabinoid extracts relieves symptoms of pain, spasticity, and bladder incontinence. There were long-term reductions in neuropathic pain in certain MS patients. And so, a lot more research needs to be done. And I think now with the liberalization of marijuana prescribing laws, there's going to be more research on that. And that's welcome. And we'll be talking about this. It'll be a theme in the latter part of 2014 and going forward in 2015 here on Intelligent Medicine, because CBD is an emerging nutraceutical that's going to be sold over the counter. It's a legal hemp-derived extract that may have some remarkable anti-inflammatory properties in a wide variety of conditions, and might really be a revolutionary product. More on that to come. All right, vitamin D. Well, okay, the clue that I mentioned in part one is that people near the equator tend to get less MS, and people at northern and southern latitudes tend to get... Did I see people at the equator get more MS? They get less MS. People at the extremes of latitude are more prone to it, and that's because it's definitely been shown that low levels of vitamin D are correlated with the severity of MS. Now, we are a little bit far away from demonstrating that high-dose vitamin D supplementation relieves MS. But there are some tantalizing new studies. There's a 2012 research study from Norway that looked at whether or not taking a vitamin D supplement reduced the number of relapses or prevented disability. And you can find this information at the website of vitamindcouncil.org. I think it's .org. It's the Dr. Cannell website. And he does a good job of summarizing vitamin D research there. If you look under MS, it'll talk about this study. The main results of the study were that the number of relapses that people had was the same whether they were taking vitamin D or not. Taking vitamin D did not prevent further disabilities from developing in people with MS. But the problem is the amount of the vitamin D people took during the study was greater than the amount the U.S. government recommends, but not as much as what the Vitamin D Council recommends, which is up to 10,000 international units of vitamin D per day. And some studies have suggested that the sweet spot for vitamin D dosing, although there's no one-size-fits-all because some people absorb vitamin D more avidly than others, is up around 14,000 international units. Please don't try that at home without a doctor's supervision because you can go toxic with vitamin D. But the suggestion is that there is potential benefit in ameliorating symptoms or reducing the frequency of relapses or slowing the progression of MS. Although the research has not really been completed, and it isn't clear how much vitamin D you need to prevent or treat MS, if indeed there is an effect. But it's unlikely that you'll run into trouble if you take 5 to 7,000 international units of vitamin D per day. If you're going to take more, you know, consider getting your vitamin D levels monitored. Okay, other supplements, N-acetylcysteine. That's a good precursor for glutathione, and we give it to our patients. Alpha-lipoic acid, you know, perhaps in a dosage of, you know, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 or 1,500 a day. Alpha-lipoic acid is a unique antioxidant that's considered the master antioxidant of the body that actually has the property of it can cross the blood-brain barrier readily. So it's a good brain antioxidant. We also recommend pycnogenol for the same reason. It's a plant-based compound that's a polyphenol that is derived from the maritime pine tree, and it is a potent antioxidant that has the ability to penetrate the brain and protect the brain. When it comes to supporting myelin, myelin is the substance that coats the nerves, and it gets stripped off in MS, thus causing aberrant nerve conduction. And we want to strengthen the myelin and the cell membranes by giving phosphatidylcholine and phosphatidylserine. These are the primary constituents of myelin, so they're part of a program for MS. For anti-inflammatory effects, we might use curcumin and perhaps boswellin. There are certain forms of curcumin that are more bioavailable to the brain. You'll have to do a little due diligence in terms of that. And the claims are sometimes, you know, they're a little questionable. As you know, people claim my product works better in the brain. And, you know, it's not entirely clear yet which products make curcumin more bioavailable to neurological conditions. We want to use a lot of fish oil, in particular DHA. DHA seems to be primarily responsible for the anti-inflammatory effects of fish oil. We want to use niacinamide. Some studies have shown that 1,500 milligrams of niacinamide has a nice anti-inflammatory effect in MS. And in, you know, there's a couple of small studies looking at niacinamide in MS. And it's a good natural anti-inflammatory. At those doses, you need to monitor liver function, although niacinamide is not nearly as toxic to the liver as niacin. I like to use a product called ModuCare, which contains stearinols. These have steroid-like effects in autoimmunity and tend to damp down autoimmunity. This is made by a company called Wakanaga ModuCare. Also, we may want to use gamma-tocopherol-rich vitamin E because of its antioxidant properties. We certainly want to use ubiquinol because ubiquinol or coenzyme Q10 helps to support the mitochondrial function, and we know that mitochondrial function is damaged or impaired in the brain in patients with MS, so any kind of mitochondrial support we can offer. We may want to use methylated B vitamins like methyl tetrahydrofolate, B12, and pyridoxal 5-phosphate. because there are actually some instances where patients with MS have low levels of B12, and that compounds their problems. The B12 deficiency causes neurological symptoms, and I'm not saying that B12 is the magical cure for MS, but it can has the potential to support nerve function and ameliorate the symptoms of peripheral numbness and tingling and weakness and balance problems that accompany MS. We would use melatonin. Melatonin has a role also in protecting the brain and in promoting normal sleep patterns, which are restorative in patients who have MS, because sleep is often disturbed. And we would want to use zinc and selenium and trace minerals in patients who suffer from MS. So those are some of the supplements that we want to key into. And just a word about the role of exercise. You know, it was initially suggested that patients with MS refrain from exercise. And the reason for that is that many patients notice that elevated body temperature really creates setbacks for them. And I can't for the life of me understand why there was one contestant, a perennial contestant of the New York City Marathon, who suffered from MS. And she was invariably the last person to cross the finish line, sometimes in 17 hours. And why she put herself through that rigorous training regimen, sometimes in high temperatures, and did long-distance endurance events, I guess it was a sort of triumph of the will. But I thought to myself, this is just a horrible thing to do to yourself, to superheat your muscles and elevate your core temperature and thus exacerbate symptoms. On the other hand, it clearly is important for patients with MS to undertake some sort of exercise program, because otherwise you may ultimately develop muscle atrophy. I mean, already there's a tendency towards fatigue and muscle weakness. So you have to continually be involved in some form of physical therapy or supervised exercise, perhaps something like Tai Chi, which there's an element of balance, or yoga, which helps to keep the patient from deteriorating, because there is really a tendency for weakness and balance problems to take over. So I think a happy medium in terms of exercise is important. There's also, you know, when it comes to stress reduction, MS patients often report that stress worsens their MS symptoms and may be associated with an exacerbation. And there's even been some study of this, and an expert panel concluded that there was a possible relationship between stress and either MS onset or the likelihood of an MS relapse or an exacerbation. And some studies have actually shown that increased conflicts and disruptions in routine were followed by an increased risk of developing new brain lesions weeks later. So obviously dealing with life stress is an important factor. Stress has a devastating effect on all parts of the body. As I said in part one, it may have an impact on gut permeability. It may have an impact on the blood-brain barrier, allowing toxins to traverse from the gut or allergens to traverse from the gut into the circulatory system and get into the brain. And that may be part of the pathogenesis of MS, and stress may be a mediator of that. So I would encourage mild exercise, relaxation, yoga, tai chi, prayer, meditation, massage therapy. One type of esoteric therapy that I learned about several years ago that has kind of waned in popularity, but it is interesting, is bee sting therapy. Bee sting therapy involves literally harvesting bees and applying them to certain areas of the body where there are neurological symptoms. And the bee sting is thought to be associated with some sort of immune optimization, or maybe helps with pain regulation. And this was very popular in the late 80s, early 90s. I think it's waning in popularity, but there may be something to it, and there may be still some adherence to this type of therapy. Or alternatively, bee venom can be harvested from bees and put in vials and then can be injected into different areas of the body. Another way of applying that is via acupuncture points. And certainly acupuncture has some claim to fame because it helps to promote nerve activity and circulation, and in areas where there is blocked chi or blocked energy or blocked nerve transmission, acupuncture may offer some benefits. So, there you have it. And, probably, other people are using other things for MS, but I found that this program that we use is really quite successful. It's slowing the progression of the disease. I think it's very important to follow the diet component, take the right supplements, utilize exercise and stress reduction, and to take, at the very least, low-dose naltrexone, high-dose vitamin D and fish oil and so on. And this can make a huge difference in the outcome of the disease. Most of my patients doing quite well. The caveat is, come in early if you suffer from MS. And then it's more likely that we can slow the progression of the disease or you can recover function. Patients who are already wheelchair-bound and extremely debilitated, we may slow the progression further, but we can't return the patient to status quo. So that's today's clinical focus on the subject of multiple sclerosis. I thank you for listening. And please, if you have a relative or friend who suffers from this problem, please call their attention to this podcast. Let's get it viral. Another resource on the diet is Dr. Terry Walls, the Walls Protocol. Check out her website because there's lots of detail on paleo diet for MS and neurological diseases. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.